You and I, we don't expect perfection from people, and certainly not with each other, but no. I think there was like a baseline that the people in our lives and people at the core of our upbringing were not able to meet.
You need support that reflects what you're trying to become. Mm-hmm. And when you try and try and try to find that in the people that are already present, and you can't find that, you have to go somewhere else to find it.
Hello, my lovely listeners. If you guys are watching on YouTube, stick around till the end of the video for some exclusive outtakes. If you're listening on streaming platforms, you don't have access to these. So if that's something you care about, go ahead and hop over to YouTube, hit subscribe, hit the bell icon. That way you're not only staying up to date with these podcast episodes, but you also will be notified when I release other video types, which are coming very soon, including a documentary that I'm making and plenty of other goodies. If you prefer to just listen, that's totally fine. There's plenty of good stuff in this episode. And without further ado, let's dive in.
Mr. Mourner James.
Mr. Nolan Boyd.
That is the sound of the singing bowls of Question Everything. Welcome to episode 5, part 2. Can you explain to us why it's part 2?
So we previously recorded our episode and had a multitude of audio issues. My microphone and the cable just decided to peace out.
It was like, this episode sucks ass. You're on your own.
Yeah. So I don't know. I felt like we covered good ground and we talked about a lot of good things, but maybe it was a sign.
Yeah.
Who's to say?
Yeah. I tried to salvage it too. And at first I thought that most of the episode was fine and there were only like a couple spots where your mic cable was like shorting out. Mm-hmm. And then I went in to edit it and it was a freaking disaster and, came to the conclusion that I couldn't save it. And this conversation that we're going to have is worth hearing the entirety of.
Yeah.
So, it's also not a conversation when you can only hear one person.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, I talk to myself all day, every day anyway, so.
You just needed a moment of silence.
But so I'm used to that, but I recognize in the form of like podcasting, you know, it's not the most helpful.
It's kind of helpful.
Especially when I'm a podcast guest.
Yes, that is the point. You're just here to look pretty.
I mean,
doing a great job.
You said it, girl. It's your words.
Oh man, I'm excited for this one. I think we're both feeling a little better than we were when we recorded the first one too. So
yeah, it's a nice sunny day out.
Feel that good. Is true. You can actually see it on camera too. The sun is like really trying to blast through these curtains.
Yeah, every time the sun comes out, I forget that there was anything wrong with my life.
Same here. In fact, there just ends up being nothing wrong with our life. As soon as the sun shines through, it like melts mm-hmm. away all the problems.
Right. I don't know. I need it, man.
Same here. Let's take advantage of it. Our original episode that we tried to record, we were talking about why the self-improvement journey is so lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And we could go a million different directions with this topic. And I know that this isn't going to be a rehash of what we discussed. So I'm curious if you've had any other thoughts since then on this topic, or if there's just something like personal that you're experiencing that makes you think of this struggle or dilemma.
Yeah. So I feel like for me, the last like year and a half, almost couple of years now, has been like a monumental period of just major change, because I just got to a point in my life, I was like almost 25, and I was like, I am sick of the way things are. Mm. I don't like what I'm doing, I don't like where I'm at, and I was just starting to realize that a lot of the core people around me that I'd surrounded myself with didn't really have my best interests in mind.
Yeah.
And I just didn't want to be complacent in this stagnant feeling anymore. And so step by step, I guess, as I started to kind of deconstruct my worldview, my spirituality and religion, and really evaluate my circle, I realized that a lot of undoing had to take place. And so it did. And piece
and
by
thus it did.
And it did. And piece by piece, it like my life fell apart in a lot of ways. And in the moment it felt very disastrous and very unpleasant. And I had never felt more alone. And then as time passes and started to get some pieces back together as you and I became closer as friends, I realized that like big change, I don't know, it takes you out of your situation, and your situation, even if it's not good for you, is what's most comfortable. It's where you feel most secure. And even though I had to say goodbye to a lot of relationships, a lot of ways of thinking, you know, I lost all sense of comfort. And so naturally a sense of identity as well. And it was quite the trip to rediscover that and to kind of sit in that for a while.
Yeah, you have to sit with that, because when you're resisting it, like, you don't grow.
No.
That's exactly what happens. I see it a lot in adults, right? Because kids are so flexible and they have a lot of neuroplasticity.
Their brains are malleable.
Yes. they really are. And it's up to us, like, what we do with that as adults. But I just noticed there's this like weird perception that if you're feeling uncomfortable, that it's bad, that it's to be avoided. And that's I think what our religion taught us growing up.
Oh yeah.
Which is really frustrating, especially when trying to have a conversation with the adults we care about in our life about like the place that we've come to. It's not that we felt uncomfortable, which was something telling us, hey, there's something bad, like you need to avoid this. And then we just kept like playing around with it because we wanted to be bad. And now we're just totally off the rails.
Right.
It's that we saw that discomfort and we said, okay, this is here for a reason. But maybe it is trying to show me something else.
Yeah.
And so you sat with it for how long?
I would say, I don't know, probably the better part of a year, I think.
Like in like the peak intensity.
At the peak intensity of like all the heartbreak and pain and anguish and discomfort that comes with deconstructing.
Yeah.
Almost every facet of your life. But I mean, a big part of it for me was like the religious, spiritual aspect of it. And one thing I also wanted to add to what you were saying about like discomfort and kind of what that, how your body and like emotions respond to that from like a neurological standpoint. Like, I think your brain just is wired to like resist change because because it's like just trying to survive.
Yeah. Change is seen as a threat almost. Like if you've survived this long this way, any change could like threaten that.
Right. But then it's us and our consciousness and our souls that are wanting a bit more. Where we become aware that we want a bit more out of our lives, a bit more for our lives, that really start to open the possibility for, or that change needs to happen.
Yeah.
And so it's this really interesting internal battle, if you will. But I think when you challenge yourself and you're able to be able to sit with your discomfort, sit with not knowing what
that's
the future looks like, not knowing in what you believe in as a way to cope with your existence. I think there's a really interesting, almost harmony in oneself that begins to occur.
There's a lot of cases where I see religion actively fighting against that,
mm-hmm.
actively fighting against this stripping away
mm-hmm.
of everything superficial, because when you do that, you're left with just yourself.
Yeah.
And like, what happens when you're just left with yourself? That's kind of, I've expressed this on, I think episode 4, if we're going back in time now, when I'm talking about the philosophy of this podcast,
mm-hmm.
like that's what my first podcast, Enter the Void, did for me. Right. Because I was completely by myself with my thoughts, and I would say things out loud and immediately catch some things and be like, wait, that doesn't actually resonate with me. Like, why do I believe that?
Mm-hmm.
Why did I just say that? And when you're left with yourself, you have just this, like, you just have pure consciousness, which I think is a reflection of creation, of God in some way, a reflection of truth.
Yeah. Definitely some sort of like divinity, I think.
Yeah.
I think there's a piece of that that's within all of us. And I mean, it's hard to say what it is and who's to say what it is, but I think there's something there. I think there's something more. But yeah, like I definitely feel like that resonates with my journey too.
Yeah.
You know, growing up in the religion that I didn't like start to deconstruct or even get to a point where I was brave enough to confront that, until I was like in my mid-20s. I look back on where I was and how I was feeling and when I was still in it, and there was so much dissonance. Like, I really had no identity other than the labels that I had adopted through the conditioning and the culture of that religion.
Yeah.
And other than like, and I didn't know what I wanted for my life other than kind of what I was supposed to want.
Yeah, the path that had already been laid out for you.
Yeah, which was to get married and have a family, which those are great things. There's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, for me, like, that was not something that I felt was in the cards for me, you know, in the traditions of that church, because I'm gay. I'm not going to marry a woman.
Yeah.
There are a lot of great girls out there, but they're not
for you.
they're not for me in that way, you know?
Yeah.
And
you talked about dissonance, and I just want to like dive into this really quick, cuz not only does this apply to like religious questioning,
mm-hmm.
but really just the entire self-improvement journey as a whole. Like, the dissonance that you feel, that's a problem to solve.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like feeling discomfort from growth, right? If you want to get taller, you're going to need to fight through the discomfort of your bones aching.
The growing pains.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, yeah, that's one thing, but the dissonance is an issue. It's an issue that most people aren't willing to confront, because when you confront dissonance, when you look to take it apart and analyze it, that's discomfort.
Yeah.
And so like,
but dissonance is it's a specific feeling. It is different from discomfort. It mm-hmm. just, I'm trying to like really pinpoint it and define it, but it just felt just kind of tumultuous more than anything.
Yeah. It feels like a big storm, really.
Yes.
And it's this dissonance. I think that when you're on this journey of improving yourself, maybe even transcending yourself, you will very quickly see which people are willing to sit with discomfort and battle dissonance and mm-hmm. those that aren't.
Yeah.
And the problem is most people aren't willing to do that, which is why you lose everybody. Mm-hmm. It's not that you don't love each other. It's just that, like, you're not heading in the same direction. And I don't mean I'm going to heaven and you're going to hell, not like that.
Right.
But it's more of I'm choosing to create a better life for myself. And through this process, as I'm like confronting this dissonance, that requires me to do that with the people around me as well. Mm-hmm. Not just my ideas, not just the places that I go or the things that I do, but the people I spend time with, mm-hmm. which was something you mentioned in the beginning of how like you also looked at your circle of people and realized they were heavily contributing to your lack of satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. And just like the general energy. And I think part of that dissonance that I was feeling in my life too. I think people are powerful, energetic beings. I think we all have an energy to us, however you want to define that, however you want to like express that. I think there's something like that going on within all of us. And I think that,
yeah.
and I hate to sound like one of those people who's like, oh, they had bad energy, so I had to leave, because I think that sometimes used as a scapegoat for being just maybe a little narcissistic and
yeah, and whatever, not giving people grace for their flaws or whatever.
Right. But when you start finding more harmony in yourself, and like your energy changes, and I just think that the things you naturally, like the things and the people you naturally start to attract and become attracted to are different from what's around you. So I think it's a very natural process of distancing or letting go,
yeah,
in terms of relationships and stuff. And so, yeah.
So for somebody who's going through that, because we've both been on a similar like timeline, I would say,
yeah,
with our deconstructing of our past life and mm-hmm. past selves and everything that entails. So I'm curious what questions you had during that time. Like, what were some, even if it was kind of a self-pity thing of like, oh, why is this so hard, whatever, even though like that's a totally valid question.
Yeah.
Like, what kind of questions did you have? Because I would love to dive into some of those and maybe like in hindsight, look back and try and find some answers or some truth within the things that we were struggling with and questioning at the time.
Yeah, for sure.
And while you're thinking about that, I'm going to take my shoes off because I just realized we're like, you're socking it up in here.
Yeah.
And we're comfy. This is going to be a shoeless episode.
Heck yeah.
From here on out.
Heck yeah. Oh,
man, feels good.
Feel the ground.
Stretch the feet. We're like grounding through our socks, through the carpet, through the wood, into the ground.
When we're literally on the second story of this house.
Yeah, we are not grounding at all.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I'm just trying to think back to that time in my life and kind of what was going through my head. At the time when I really started to cross that line of like really taking a good step forward into the unknown, that was deconstruction. I had just almost finished a year at school. It was like a religious institution. So
that sounds like fun.
Yeah. That's another episode, but, sure. And I think a lot of my questions at the time were very much more like kind of that self-pity route of,
yeah,
it was a lot of why questions, like, why am I having to do this? Like, why did generations before me not do the work? And even though those are valid questions and valid frustrations, I did kind of use those questions as a scapegoat to just assign some blame for a little while.
That makes sense.
And there's probably healthier ways to, and like, to approach all that. But
what effect did that have on you to like use? Because those are valid questions, right? And I think that we could look at those questions through mm-hmm. the lens of, okay, what is it that has been either preventing or whatever these prior generations from yeah. making progress and breaking these cycles? Like, that way I can figure it out and do it myself. But instead, yeah. you and I think I was too, we were using this as just a way to assign blame, like you said. So like, how yeah. did that affect you?
It was, I think in some ways it was a coping mechanism to deal with this new onslaught of pain and darkness that I was now confronting in myself. Mm-hmm. I think of a lot of it was, you know, I mean, when we have problems in our life, I think that generally a lot of the times we have something to do with it ourselves.
Totally.
And, but it also allowed me to recognize, that there were things that were passed on to me. There's some very long standing generational, like problems, like cycles and curses, if you will, that I felt like were passed down to me. And, mm-hmm. and I used to feel like such a victim about it. But my victimhood really started to shift when I realized, or when I started to find empowerment and recognizing that I think part of my mission in this life, in this timeline, is to properly undo that.
Big task.
Yeah.
I think everything that you just said is something that is going to resonate with almost everybody in our generation. Mm-hmm. Like, we're noticing just this big shift and expansion of awareness around the aspects of like generations mm-hmm. and what we would call generational curses. Like, there are so many forms of unchecked abuse that have gone on. And I think the other part of the loneliness that happens is when we confront this, when we become aware of it, and then we try to do something about it. We all want a healthy family.
Yeah.
We all want a relationship with our family members. Like, all these older generations think that we're just trying to like destroy society and we hate everybody and everything. It's like, yeah. No, I'm finally showing love and respect for myself. And I want us to all do the same so that we can actually have a healthy relationship together. Mm-hmm. And it's met with so much resistance because there's an unwillingness to acknowledge what contributions they've made to these unhealthy cycles.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I 100%. And I think that our generation and people kind of in our age range and younger are finding a lot of power in being able to stand up for themselves and confront these issues. And that's why I think we see a lot of really strained family dynamics these days, especially people our age. And it's because we have to draw lines. We have to like call things for what they are. And, yeah. But to kind of like reel it in a bit, when I realized I needed to change, because again, I was also part of my own problems. I chose the people that were around me. I chose the circumstances that I was in.
Especially as an adult, right? As a child, there's less,
right.
less room for that. But
right. So, I mean, and in some ways, like, you know, I obviously didn't know then what I know now.
Sure.
But I recognize that a part of why I chose those things was because I lived in a way that was in accordance to like a lot of these cycles, these unhealthy relationship dynamic cycles. And
you almost attracted those things.
Oh, absolutely. Like, the people around me were a glaring reflection of my own pain. And they're good people. They're just hurt too.
Yeah. And, yeah.
And, and so, yeah, it's kind of like a complex issue, you know? And
so, I think becoming aware, look, 'cause there's a lot of complexity. And one question that people might have, I know a question that I had was just like, how the hell do I figure this out? 'Cause I'm obsessed with figuring it out. Not in the sense of like, I have to have all the answers, but in the sense of, I want to discover the path that leads to the healthiest, happiest version of me and mm-hmm. those around me.
Yeah.
And so one question I had was, how do I figure this out? And the advice that I would give to myself just like 2 years ago, a year ago, whatever, because especially this past year has been so transformational. The advice I would give is, if you see a problem on the outside, look inside mm-hmm. for the answer. And that is something that aligns very well with the law of attraction, because we were talking about how we attracted those people and those situations. Like, I spent most of my life in relationships with, both like romantically and friendship-wise, with people that did not respect me and who didn't show me that they actually cared about me. And for a long time, I assigned blame as well. Mm-hmm. Why do all my friends treat me like garbage? Like, why does nobody put in the same amount of effort that I do? Why do all of my girlfriends leave me for all these shitty guys? Like, whatever,
yeah.
Whatever finger I could point. And the advice I wish I could give myself, even way back then, is look within yourself. Because you don't love yourself. You don't respect yourself.
And that's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a shot straight to the ego.
It totally is. And it requires a lot of maturity. It requires a lot of intentionality. And so this process is so weird, because whenever you start to realize that the problem lies within, not you're this evil, sinful being, you're worth less than dirt.
You're just hurt.
Yeah. You're just, yeah. If you want to heal, stop looking like to heal stuff on the outside. Mm-hmm. Like, you're hurt, so heal yourself.
Yeah. But it's,
yeah,
I recognize that frustration though, because it's just like obviously no one can make you love yourself. No one can do the work for you. But I mean, knowing you and your story, and just kind of also with what I went through growing up, some of the dynamics and everything, like, it would have been nice to have some really good, solid examples of how to have self-respect, how to like love mm-hmm. yourself, and how to like properly love one another.
Yeah. This bringing up this point of having examples or the lack thereof, that's another thing that is so immensely frustrating and difficult about this journey, because as children, we really only have like the people around us to learn from. Mm-hmm. Like, we are very relationship-based creatures. I've actually been exploring the idea lately that relationships are where meaning comes from. Like, if you were on Earth by yourself, like, what would be the point of anything? And that could be a whole other episode, but the point that I'm trying to make is, on this journey, you realize that you need examples, you need support that reflects what you're trying to become. Mm-hmm. And when you try and try and try to find that in the people that are already present, and you can't find that, you have to go somewhere else to find it. If you're looking to your parents for an let's say I want a healthy marriage mm-hmm. and I want to enjoy my life and love myself and nurture myself. And I want to like do the things that I love doing, and I want to have financial freedom or whatever. You could list a huge list of things, right? And no one person has every quality or is a perfect example of everything. But yeah. If you have if you gain clarity on what you're wanting for your life, and you can't look to your parents for that, for an example of a healthy marriage, which I know most people can't. Most people cannot look to their parents as an example of a healthy marriage. Mm-hmm. So we don't have that. Okay, well, let's move on. Let's look to our parents for like how to treat other people, or just how to have a sense of identity outside of anybody else. Oh, it's kind of hard to do that too. So like,
and I think the religious upbringing plays into that too.
It makes it so much worse. And yeah, that's like a little bit of anger that I think I still hold, mm-hmm, because I hate that has to be a contributing factor. Like, all of this is complicated enough.
Yeah.
You throw religion in where it strips people of their identity even more. It suppresses them even more, and it scares them even more.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess what I'm saying is, like, if you can't find it with the people that are present, you have to go somewhere else and find it.
Yeah.
And that process, as much as you love these people, you know that they're not good for you,
mm-hmm,
and you have to leave. Now you're in a place where you're searching for people that just exemplify the effort and show that they're going in the same direction as you.
Yeah.
And I think that's how we became friends.
Yeah. And you and I, we don't expect perfection from people, and certainly not with each other. But
no.
I think there was like a baseline that we both felt like we were not able. Like, there's a baseline that the people in our lives and people at the core of our upbringing were not able to meet.
And we had to choose that baseline too.
Yeah. And it stems from us healing our wounds and understanding like what we deserve, because what that did to me growing up, it's, and the work that it's taken to heal from that and unlearn those unhealthy and traumatic responses that I now have to certain situations and things in my relationships, like it's just been a lot. And
yeah. And I totally agree.
You know, again, people didn't need to be perfect. But I think there were definitely some things that should have happened and should not have happened. And I don't really know how to fully explain all that in a way that makes sense.
Yeah,
there's a lot more to it, but I guess, sorry, I'm like, the point I guess I'm trying to make now is that having done the work that we've done, there was a baseline that we feel like just wasn't met, and
yeah,
left us with all these problems, and just realizing that we deserve more, we deserve better, and
it's really like an average, just to tie it into the law of attraction again, this idea that you said it yourself earlier, that we're energy.
Mm-hmm.
We are energy. And so the average vibration that you project is a combination of the thoughts that you have, the beliefs that you hold, the places you go, the people you spend time with. Every aspect of your life contributes to your average vibration.
Yeah.
And so the lower that vibration, the more miserable and hateful and angry and sad and lost you are.
Yeah.
And the more separated you are from your highest self.
Yeah.
And so that if I want to raise my baseline, but nobody or nothing else around me is matching that or doing the same, it's not that I'm better than you. It's just that I want better than you do.
Yeah.
Like, I won't tolerate this lower level of existence like you are. And so
yeah,
that, I think, is how we attracted each other into our lives, because neither of us were perfect. We were both hurting, but we both wanted something more, and we were actively searching for it.
And I think we both saw, like our higher selves in each other. Like I recognized totally. That within you, and I think you recognize that within me. And some people might say, like, you just recognize the potential. And I'm like, that's part of it. But I think there was something deeper. I just think we just like connected, I think, on a spiritual level pretty immediately, even though we were in very different probably stages of like our spiritual evaluation and evolution and deconstruction and whatnot. But we just, there was just something more substantial than I, and more fulfilling and more like just fed my soul a bit more than any other real relationship I had had up to that point.
Yeah. And I'm in the same boat. This, I think substance, like you said, substantial.
Yeah.
That substance was there, and it really helped me gain more clarity on like what that emptiness I was feeling really was.
Yeah.
With those other people in my life.
Yeah. And it's interesting because we both were feeling that, but we didn't become codependent. We didn't like, we didn't just start like, we didn't lean on each other for like excessive validation. We weren't like, I didn't depend on you to make me feel better. And it was the same coming from you. Yeah. We just recognized something deeper within each other, and we encouraged that. And I think we both gave each other like the energy and the space to like heal. And that was through our friendship.
Yeah. We've been able to, again, like this loneliness is so difficult. Mm-hmm. It's so hard to do it on your own, and you can do it. And maybe it's a canon event. Like maybe you have to do it alone for a while.
Yeah. And we all got to go through it. It's the core part of the work. And that's why so many people, I think, distract, and they have, and that's why we have like vices.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, I still do it in some ways today because I'm just like a human, but I try and be aware and reground and regroup. But I think that's why we see so many people just waste so much of their time doing, you know, going out, partying, drinking, all the things, which there's nothing wrong with that. But when that's like all you're spending your like free time doing, so that you don't have to like think about your life and face yourself, then like it's a problem.
It's so funny too, because like a lot of people from my past, especially like family, mm-hmm. that say they want to like be a part of my life, and they say they want to know me. It's like, I'm literally here. Like you get an uncut, like, version of my thoughts for like over an hour mm-hmm. every single week. Like our families are not going to listen to this, most likely.
No.
And if they are, like, please don't ignore what you just said, mm-hmm. which is that we both agree and align on this idea that there is the extreme end of like of freedom, which turns into anarchy, which is the drinking and like partying every weekend. Like Cole and I were just talking about this the other day, mm-hmm. how it seems like there's two extremes that we're surrounded by, where on one hand, there's that partying extreme where you're literally wasting your life away.
And you could also like replace like partying and drinking with like any other
thing. An addiction of some sort.
Or just something that just like that just consumes so much of your time and energy.
And takes you and away from bandwidth yourself.
It takes you away from yourself. So not trying to like demonize any specific thing, but
you get the
picture. So
yeah, it's something that we're relying on for meaning.
Yeah.
And so and that's the other extreme I see, is the religious end of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so it's so this is why duality pisses me off, because they see, oh, we are good people. And then the people that party and do all this other stuff are bad people. It's like, no, you are both in the extreme category. These people are looking to external things for some sort of meaning. And so are you, except you're on the side of tyranny where there's all these rules and you have to do this and this is the only way. Uh-huh. And these people are like, oh, there's absolutely no rules and whatever. It's like, again, the harmony is in the middle. And so let it be known that if there's anyone from our past that has these assumptions about us and the way we live and how we're being so sinful, just look at what we said. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do is find this harmony. And yeah. I think that we're on that path. I think that we're headed in the right direction. But yeah. It's frustrating when it people is. From the past
refuse to see it. I know.
This is why it's so lonely. Yeah. Also, this perspective of duality, the way that they perceive everything is like right or wrong, black or white. And so they think they're right. And because we're doing something other than that, we're wrong. And it's like, there's a spectrum here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very brutal expectation and judgment. And they don't recognize it as judgment. Of course they don't, but in reality they are. And something I've heard you say many times is that like evil lies in the extremes. I think more than that, it's just if you go too far one way or the other, you just kind of miss the point.
Yeah.
And I do think in some ways balance is a bit of an illusion, but I think life just ebbs and flows and you just gotta like, I don't know, you just gotta know when to reel it in, know when to reground, recenter, and I think the key to awareness is knowing when you need to like take a step outside of yourself and evaluate kind of where you are.
Yeah.
You know? And
which is uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I think that's where a lot of that discomfort takes place. Because, you know, earlier in my life, like by the time I had gotten to the point where I was ready to just break and change, where I told myself something has to give and this time it's not going to be me.
Yeah.
I was living in extremes.
Me too.
I was white knuckling onto my like religious beliefs because I was so scared and I was so insecure, and I thought by letting that go, I knew that I would have to let go of a lot more. And even though those things were not so good for me, it was all I knew.
It was comfortable.
And I'd realize I'd have no security. So I went from being insecure to being completely
no like, secure
to like no secure, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what scared me the most and what was so hard about it. And I
totally agree.
Yeah.
It's all of that was conditioned into you, by the way, right? Because we were talking about cycles. Like there's generational cycles just like in the family, but in religion and other aspects of society, even and education.
And they're best friends.
They really are. They marry very well. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned insecurity and fear.
Mm-hmm.
That's the story of my upbringing too, was this just prevailing. And see, like with my personality, maybe it's a personality thing. Maybe it's just a human thing. And I'm just a human that's choosing to lean into it. I don't freaking know. But like, if I feel like I'm being forced to be afraid of something, when there's not the intrinsic fear, it's like extrinsic fear. Yeah. I'm like, wait a second. Like,
what are we doing here?
Maybe it's an ego thing. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to be afraid of anything. But like when I'm being taught that there's this evil being that's trying to drag me down and burn me forever, like, I'm like wait,
okay.
Yeah. Okay. So like, I just resisted that. I resisted this path that was laid out for me because it's like, I know that you're not happy with your life. You're not satisfied. You're not successful. Not like you're not rich, but you're not like whatever metric you want to measure success by, it's not you and like your life. So like, why would I take the path that you're laying out for me? That doesn't make any sense. And yeah. So you have to resist it. This path of Boy Scouts is a perfect example, right? I was put into this program and I will say, I am grateful for my experiences within Boy Scouts.
I will say I am not. I resent every second of it.
Fair enough.
But anyway.
The reason why is it facilitated my experiences in the outdoors and with like camping and stuff. And I love all of that. All the merit badge stuff, forget about it. I hated that.
Yeah. But
I'll give you an example. Like my dad got his Eagle Scout at 16 years old. There was an expectation for me to and my parents knew me well enough to know that if they made it a competition, you know, it might have a better success rate. So they were like, you should try and get your Eagle Scout before your dad did. It's like, I don't want my Eagle Scout. Don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I won't turn into an actual eagle, so I don't want it. If you can tell me that when I get my Eagle Scout, I'm going to turn into this like 10-foot wingspan, big ass bird and like fly around, I'll do it. But I knew that that wasn't the case. College was the same way, right?
Yeah.
I saw very, very clearly by junior year, but even like inklings of this beforehand, that like I'm going to go to college. I'm going to waste a bunch of time and money and get this degree that everyone else is going to have. And it's not going to be valuable. And I'm going to pay to learn instead of getting paid to learn. What's the point? So I knew by junior year, I wasn't going to go to college. Mm-hmm. I also stopped going to Scouts. This is also around the time in my life when I left the church. And it all compounded and it was terrifying. But I was so like, I was so sick and tired of people telling me that I had to be afraid of this. I had to become this. I needed to do it this way. I was over it. So I had to step back. I had to step outside of all of this. And I had to take a look at it. And I had to really just look within myself for the first time. All of these problems that I'm seeing. Mm-hmm. Like, why are they present? Well, it's something in here. And a lot of it was put there by other people, which is the unfair part of it. But there's a difference between fault and responsibility.
And ultimately, it's your responsibility to deal with it. Your trauma and your whatever else is not your fault, but it is your problem. Yeah. And that's something that I had to like, that became my mantra. I had to tell myself that religiously so that I would be able to continue my deconstruction and healing process and not just get completely swayed by self-pity.
Yeah, because it's self-pity is a bitch and she's pretty sexy.
She is, they are, he is, whoever.
Yeah, you could say he,
but you know.
He's pretty sexy.
They're
self-pity.
Alluring. And because again, I think it offers some sort of, what offers a sense of victimhood, which is a sense of security, because it is like inherently devoid of responsibility.
And it's also, it's safe in the sense that you don't have to ask questions. Mm-hmm. Whenever you're pitying yourself and you're pointing the finger, you're convincing yourself that you have the answers, which makes you feel safe. This is uncomfortable. Just going back to discomfort again.
Yeah.
Like, I'm curious what was the catalyst for you? Because I just kind of, I brought up Scouts actually for the first time, I think, in my podcast history. I didn't even remember or realize that it was like the same timeline. Like it was around 16 years old where I had all of these expectations piling up. Mm-hmm. And I was like, fuck all of this, dude. Like this is so much and it's not even me. It's not coming from me at all. So like, I know that it came a little bit later. Maybe there were still some questions for you, but like, what was the catalyst? What things were piling up for you that led to you really deciding to embark on this journey of self-discovery and kind of deconstruct and push through the loneliness, even though it was hard?
Yeah, it's a great question.
Thanks.
And with not a simple answer, but of course, yeah, not. there were definitely things that built up over time. I had never really questioned the church too much, like the validity of it.
Well, that's the big no-no.
Yeah.
That comes much later.
But my catalyst, well, so like, we grew up in the Mormon church. So
the LDS church.
The LDS church. It's got a bunch of different names for it, I guess, at this point.
I just call it Mormonism at this point.
Yeah.
Maybe out of spite. I don't know.
But, well,
it's just simpler. Other people understand. And yeah, like the majority
it's
of
the common name.
Yeah. The majority of the population knows it as the Mormon church.
Church, but it's got a different government name. So, but anyway, but what really was the catalyst for me was like, so I grew up gay and I was very, very closeted until like my mid 20s.
Naturally.
Yeah. I mean, I had initially come out to my family, like, I want to say 2019. So like several years ago.
Yeah, but it was that long ago.
Yeah, but it was met with like lukewarm, kind of an interesting reception from them. They weren't outright like, "This is wrong. You've got to fix this."
They didn't like
kick
you out onto the street,
right,
kind of thing.
But I definitely did not. I definitely was not met with like near the support that I needed during that time, because there was a lot of other stuff going on. Like my best friend at the time had just passed away as well, and it was a whole thing. Yeah. And so
you were physically separated from your family at the
time. Oh yeah,
you were in Idaho.
I was BYU. In Utah. Okay. I was at Utah. I was not at Utah. I was in Utah.
Same difference.
I was just living there.
Okay.
That's where I was kind of swayed by people that I needed to be. And my family was back home in Missouri where I grew up. And anyway, so with that kind of response and with my insecurity, I essentially kind of like walked myself back into the closet, very much like, I think it was just like a phase. Like, I think I'm probably just like bi or something, because
that makes it better.
well, because it's just like, if I'm bi, then there's still a way for me to like, you know, have like a full, like complete relationship with a woman.
Yeah. And present yourself as like,
and continue going straight. And continue going like the Mormon church life path,
mm-hmm. The covenant path.
Yeah.
That's laid out for you.
Cause I was so scared of veering from that. Anyway, and so over the next couple of years, that obviously just was like a big load of self-denial bullshit.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And so naturally with things like that, like a lot of the dissonance started just really to build up. And I had some like other mental health issues that I was had like a predisposition for. And so that was also compounding as well with that dissonance. And I was just on some really horrible medications. My health was horrible. I gained so much weight. And then I ended up at BYU campus in Idaho. And, you know, just the last place that I needed to be. I met some good people there. They were nice to me. They treated me well. But in reality, it was the last place I needed to be.
Yeah. It's the last place I want to go.
And
so,
and yeah, my health was like so bad. I had such terrible like dissonance and anxiety. I was throwing up every day. Sorry, I don't know. This is
go
a bit
for
graphic.
It.
I was throwing up every day, and it got to the point where like I started throwing up blood as well.
Oof.
And like, my weight was just getting way out of control. I was very much not myself. I felt like a zombie. I was very, very unreliable in my friendships and just in my own life. I couldn't keep a commitment to anybody or myself. And I had a moment where I was able to kind of like break through with a bit of clarity and being like, okay, I don't know the answers, but if I don't change, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
And that's when I told myself for the first time, something has to give. And this time it's not going to be me, because I've done that time and time again, and look where it's gotten me.
Yeah.
And so I finished that year at school, and I moved back home to my parents, and I just hunkered down. I went to my room in my basement, and I had like a really, really part-time job. And I just started doing the work. I isolated myself heavily, mostly because I just couldn't relate to my family, and they didn't know how to support me really. And like, our relationship was already kind of like estranged emotionally a little bit, just because the direction I was going in and their...
And just inherently who you were.
Inherently who I am too. Like, I'm just really different from my family. You know, there's also that classic.
I feel that.
Yeah. I think we both like have that classic like black sheep dynamic, which that could be a whole other thing.
Yeah.
But just know that that's there. To answer your question, that was kind of my catalyst turning point.
And you almost embraced that loneliness. And
I had to.
Yeah.
Because no, I realized too, no one else could give me what I needed.
It's very true.
And I realized the only way I'm going to survive and maybe be able to create a life that I feel is worth living is if I, like, I very much just felt like I could only rely on myself. So I needed to focus on becoming more reliable. I needed to take better care of my health. I needed to rest. I needed time. And so that's what moving home did for me. Anyway, so did that answer your question?
Yeah, it's...
I feel like I just like word vomit sometimes. So,
well, that's literally what a podcast is word vomit. So
yeah, a little kiki.
You're in the right place. Yeah, here. Yeah, dude, it's so funny too, because it's less about like you have all of this like support and love and good examples, and then you like step away from it and then get lonely, and then you have to like go through that loneliness. It's more like when you make the decision to better your life, you become aware of the loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of fighting it by going back to your comfort place and your comfort people and your comfort beliefs, instead you just acknowledge that loneliness and then you sit with it. Because it's so funny. Two things happen. Either people just fall away. They just drift off. They like, you stop expelling your energy to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they show you that they just really don't give a shit about you. That happens. The other thing that happens, because you talked about white knuckling your beliefs earlier, the people that are threatened by you stepping away, in the sense that the people, and really this is family most commonly.
I think in our cases,
yes,
specifically, so.
And there's religious stuff that plays in, all this stuff, but like,
right,
when people in your life, specifically family, have this vision, or they want this, they want to portray themselves a certain way to people. Mm-hmm. They want to be seen as having a perfect, healthy family. You stepping away from that threatens that the optics of that desire. Mm-hmm. And so they hold on to you as hard as they can. They point the blame. They say, it's your fault. The house doesn't have a crack in the foundation. You're just the problem. And they make everything your fault, but then they won't let you go either. Mm-hmm. It's like, now you're attacking me, like just outright attacking me.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to understand me. You're seeking to prove me wrong, but you still want to hold on to me. Like, now I really need to step away.
Yeah.
And so you just become aware, like, people either fall off or they hold on so tight and they strangle you.
Yeah.
And in both instances, you just have to let it go.
And they do that so much so that they, I think, how I've come to recognize it is like that white knuckling, like very just cold, militant, like vicious judgment, expectation, whatever you just described. Like the person white knuckling and just they do that to the point where you either alienate the other person or you alienate yourself. Yeah. And I think in some situations, both happens. I definitely feel like when I was hurting a lot more and some time before I got to the point where I was brave enough to face myself, I was very like vocal and very stern in my religious beliefs. And to the point where I recognized that I was like, I was not sharing the gospel. I was not defending anything. I was alienating people and I was alienating myself in the process. And I hate that. And I regret it. But it's just what happened. And so that's what I learned from that. And I've been able to see that pattern in some of the other people who were around me growing up. And obviously we saw that a lot in our religious community, in our upbringing as well, by so many different people in the church, at the church, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
It all just comes down to alienation, you know? You be this one thing or you be nothing. But I'm going to try and control and manipulate you and shame you every step of the way.
Because it's a threat to you.
Yeah. Yes. And so, yeah, it's very deep.
Yeah, it's heavy too. Like,
and it's very complex. There's no concise way to describe that and what it does to you and your brain and literally every part of your self-image.
And that's why there's entire podcasts that can run thousands of episodes just on like religious deconstruction.
Yeah.
Which is a thread that runs through every one of my episodes. Mm-hmm. I've noticed. It's like, maybe that's, it had that much of an impact on you that like it affects everything. There is no concise way to explain what it's like to go through this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for anybody that's listened to the episode up until this point, to the very end, pretty much, they're somebody that either actually gives a shit about us or they are experiencing some of these things themselves. Mm-hmm. And we've helped at least like express that, hey, like we know it's complex. It's taking an hour and however many minutes for us to just scratch the surface.
Yeah.
Like we understand that it's complex and it's difficult. My advice would be to embrace the loneliness because it's always been there. Yeah. It's just that you've become aware of it now.
And at the end of the day, you're all you got. And so,
very true.
And so learn to not be scared of that and learn to love that. Because if you can be the most reliable person in your life, then if you can show up for yourself, then you can start to show up for your life.
You can attract other people too. Yes. that will show up for you.
Exactly. You'll be able to show up better for other people. And you'll find the people that are meant for you and the people that you're meant for. And I think that's exactly what happened to the two of us.
Yeah. And it's crazy because I've really, some people were much closer and much more involved. Other mm-hmm. people were more distant, but I've lost, I would say now, hundreds of people from my past life that mm-hmm. are now just probably permanently in the past to a certain extent. And even just gaining one friend like you, it more than makes up for that.
Quality over quantity, baby.
So true.
I think I said quantity. I didn't even say quantity. Quantity.
It's full. It's quanti. Man.
You're going to have to put the explicit sticker on this episode.
That is fucking true.
Shit.
Now you're just swearing for the heck of it.
Yeah, bitch. What about it?
What about it?
Nobody died. Are you okay? I mean,
people did die during the runtime of this episode, but
I mean, somewhere,
somewhere in the world, unfortunately,
that's morbid.
But you know what? Everyone dies, and that is why you should go on this journey, because for all you know, you get one life. Maybe there's more. I believe in something else afterward, but maybe there's not. And if this is all we got, then you deserve for it to be as good as it possibly can be. And that is up to you.
It's up to you.
And it's up to you. Thanks for being my friend. And thanks for coming on the show today.
Of course. Likewise, my friend. Love you horrendously.
I love you exponentially, exceptionally.
You want to go to the Lexus dealership and look at cars?
Yeah. Great.